We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The top of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern football. Coach Fitz and the Wildcats host Nebraska and Maryland this fall at Ryan Field. Buy tickets now at nusports.com. It is opening day, so let's talk some Cubs baseball with the Cubs radio analyst Ron Coomer, who is on Twitter at CoomsCorner6. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Ron Coomer. How are you?
I'm doing great, Danny. Connor, how are you guys doing? Now, hold on. I've been listening for a while, and every morning I get up and I'm listening, and as I'm drinking my coffee sitting in here, that Harry Carey story is just hysterical.
Isn't it?
Is that not just Harry at the best? 4 a.m. in some bad part of St. Louis. It's just so Harry.
I mean, that you talk about the would we describe a larger-than-life figure, and I don't know if people can really be like that anymore, because everybody, our lives are so open and so visible, and everything is so quickly criticized and exposed in real time that it's hard to be one of these like Damon Runyon-esque kind of figures. But that was that was legit. Like that guy was superhuman.
That was his life every day. I remember listening to George Brett tell a story where he went down to Florida to see Harry. And after 2 days, he went back home. He goes, I can't keep up with this guy. Harry was 25 years older than George. And George was known to not be afraid and have a little vivation after a ball game. But yeah. He was larger than life, there's no doubt.
So how you been keeping, Coom? I know I hear your voice a ton on the station talking about all the games we're going to play from Cubs seasons past. And it's good to hear your voice talking baseball. But I'm wondering, you know, some of us have filled the time with old games. Some of us have filled the time going back and looking at, you know, box scores and stat dives and stuff. How have you been filling the time waiting for opening day to come around?
Well, it's been a little bit difficult, to be quite honest. We were in Arizona for quite some time. We came to Florida here. And so I'm in Clearwater. I haven't been in Chicago in a long time, so I'm missing our city big time. But we flew. We decided we had to fly. We had to get to our own house from Arizona. So we're kind of self-quarantining here in Clearwater Beach. So I've been watching. I watched Game 7 a couple days ago. And I've been watching a lot of the YouTube things that happened with Cubs baseball from the 16 season. And in particular, the playoffs. Because that's what Pat and I and Joe Ostrowski are going to do starting April 1st is we're going to go through the Cubs playoffs. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But just trying to get back some of those little bits and pieces of that time, that 16 season and that playoff time. So I've been doing that. And then I'm kind of we've been watching Homeland. So I'm watching that show late at night. And then I'm kind of the conspiracy theorist. So I've been watching some of that stuff on Netflix late night, you know, watching some of that. So just trying to make it down here, and I'll tell you one thing, we're really missing opening day, that's for sure.
When you think of opening day in your career, was there any anomalies, anything special happen, whether it's your performance, a teammate, or anything that is always top of mind when you think of MLB opening day?
The two that really stand out, well, there's three, actually, Danny, that really stand out to me. One, my first opening day in the big leagues, you know, when you get introduced on the line and you're just looking around and you're like, you know, this is, you know, this is the coolest thing ever. When you first get to the big leagues and you go through your first spring training, and then you make the big league team, and now you're there at opening day. So that was one. I'll never forget my opening day at Wrigley Field as a Cub for the first time. I just, you know, that's the one thing that I always wanted to be, was a Cub and play in Chicago, and I had the opportunity to do that, so I remember that. And then, you know, the opening day at Yankee Stadium, the very first day we played in New York, that was something special when you walk out in the pinstripes and get introduced in front of Yankee Stadium. That was another one. Performances, nothing big. My first at bat as a Yankee, it was not opening day. It was the third game because Ventura, Robin, and I were platooning. So I played game three against Wilson Alvarez, who was a left-handed pitcher. And my first at-bat as a Yankee, I hit a home run, so in Yankee Stadium. So you can imagine what that was like. I was fan favorite for 24 hours anyway. But, it was, yeah, I just remember probably the one that sticks out the most is opening day at Wrigley Field as a Cub, the first time I put on a uniform. It was, you know, I'd been there so many years as a kid and, you know, finally getting to do it.
So, Coom, you never know when a season starts how long it'll take for the questions that every ball club has to resolve itself. You know, last year we were looking at the Cubs' bullpen and wondering when things were going to fix itself after a really rough start. What aspect of the team were you looking forward to seeing an answer to? Not necessarily like a solution, but just a kind of how this unit was going to play, how this player was going to work, or how this lineup was going to focus. Is there any one thing you were looking forward to getting some answers on sooner rather than others?
Yeah, I was looking at it's kind of a collage of guys, Connor. It's the young players who took a step backwards last year. Every team and every player has that moment in their career where they get to the big leagues and then the league catches up with them, and then how are they going to react to that? Right? And are they going to get good advice in the offseason or bad advice? Are they going to be lied to somewhat by, you know, some of the people close to the, you're okay, it wasn't your fault, blah, blah, you know, all those things that get said to people when it is on them. They've got to make the adjustment and get things fixed. And I really wanted to see that. I wanted to see our young players who struggled last year for the first time in their career, or maybe even in their life, what they did to come into camp. And I really was pleasantly surprised, and I talked to you guys about that at the house, so to speak. We talked about that some of the young guys had taken a step forward this spring in their work, and I thought that was a positive thing. That was the thing I felt could make or break this Cubs season.
I keep thinking about John Lester. I keep thinking about somebody who knows where he is relative to the end of his career and what it means not only to miss all of this time, but to have to go through essentially what we're expecting is a second spring training to re-stretch out, to warm up again. And if, in fact, we end up missing more baseball than we expect, that means he starts another season with another crop of new players coming in to take jobs. Just how painful it must be and how disconcerting it has to be to know so much is out of the control of a great player nearing the end of his career.
Yeah, Danny, that's a, you know, everybody has those moments, right, where you know that your best times of your career is past you. I really think, though, Johnny was in a great place coming into camp. I thought that after his first outing, which was not very good, he just didn't have command. All of a sudden, you got the really mentally sharp John Lester, and he was locked in and making great pitches. So this is going to be something that, you know, you got to jumpstart the mind and the body again, you know, in your mid-30s. It's not easy. But he's one of those people. He's a really hard worker. He's mentally tough when it comes to getting prepped for the season. I've always really enjoyed watching his preparation because I think he has a great perspective. I don't think he gets too high and too low on anything when he talks about what he's doing in his preparation during spring, but I know it's eating at him when he doesn't do well in a spring training game. It just, you can just see it, just, you know, the smolder in his belly. Mm-hmm. You know, it just makes him, it just irritates the heck out of him. And I love seeing that. But you're right, Dan. It's not easy to jumpstart yourself a couple different times in a season when you're in your mid-30s, that's for sure.
So, Coom, I was reading the news about Noah Syndergaard going for Tommy John surgery, Syndergaard of the Mets, and just kind of scrolling around through Twitter as I saw that kind of break, and I stumbled across Dan Heron's Twitter feed, former Cub Dan Heron, briefly.
Yep.
And he was kind of writing that, and I want to make sure I get it as close as I can here. He was writing that as guys try to manage pitching while they're feeling healthy and staying ready and also not going overboard with work right now as we're waiting for, you know, official team workouts to get back into the swing of things, he's real worried that guys aren't going to be able to manage how they feel versus how hard they're throwing versus how hard they should be throwing, and is basically worried that we're going to see more of these and not fewer of these over the next month or two. I wonder if you share his concern or if you could just shed some light on exactly what he's talking about with baseball fans, because they, you know, having not thrown 90 ever before in my life, I kind of struggle to understand exactly how these guys are feeling just kind of pacing around in a bullpen right now.
Well, I do share his concern, and I really believe that the teams that, of their star players, whether it be a starting pitcher or a position player, of their star players, how many of these teams go in with the full repertoire of players, right? Do they have all their guys? Are they healthy? Are they going to get through this time to be able to play and play a full season, whatever that may be? The hard part is everybody was cranked up and game ready to start the season when we left. And then you go home, and how many guys are going to be able to back off now and not throw bullpens every 3 days and cut it loose, you know, throwing for a guy like Syndergaard, throwing close to 100 miles an hour? Are you going to be able to back off? And those are real concerns for the pitchers. And I said yesterday, I really believe that when we come back and you know, maybe you expand the roster by a player or two, those need to be bullpen arms, because I really believe the managers have to protect their pitchers, and in particular the starting pitchers, in this new environment of having a double spring training and all this time off. I really think that's going to be a problem, because guys, this is unprecedented, and you can't be around your pitching coaches and your trainers and what are they doing? And that's a real problem right now, no doubt.
See, and Coom, I think this accelerates current pitching trends also. That if we're getting away from the idea of the traditional starting rotation, and we're seeing what happens with openers, all these proposals that I've seen on the table about doing three doubleheaders a week or even like minor league style seven-inning double headers that we, you know, we've had in A ball, mm-hmm. that I remember, and how we're going to have all of these opportunities to radically rethink how pitchers are deployed. This is just another variable. I mean, we may never return to the idea. This might be what kind of breaks traditional pitching, to just what you're saying, to say it might just be now, this is the pitching staff. These are the innings we have to cover, and this is how we're going to do it matchup-wise, et cetera. We may never. This might be the actual inflection point that changes pitching as we know it.
Well, it could, and I would venture to say, to go along with your point, there are teams that are going to look at it that way. And I would say, in particular, when you get past, let's say, your first three starters, the back two guys, are they going to be looked at the same as the front two? Probably not. And that could very well be. I, you know, there's certain players that you have on a ball club that you want them on the field performing as much as possible. So your best pitchers you want out there, and you want them to pitch as much as they possibly can. But the backside of your rotation, you know, for some teams, especially the smaller market teams that can't pay for that spot, if you're really deficient in that spot, why continue to run that guy out there and not make him just a 2 or 3 inning guy? Go out and throw as hard as you can for 3 innings. Give us the best you got. You're out of here, and we're going to another guy. That very well could be. We're seeing some of that now. I wouldn't say it was as prevalent as, you know, when Tampa first started doing it, that we thought we would see, but this is changing times, there's for sure. And I'm 100% sure there's going to be numbers to back up certain teams if they decide to go that route. But you're right, there's just a certain amount of innings that have to be covered. Even, let's say, if it's those last two starting spots, those innings have to be covered. How do you do that? You know, and there could be some change, no doubt.
I was trying to think, Coom, of any type of player that this layoff might benefit just a little bit, and maybe those are the guys, maybe those back-end starters. But at the same time, not every guy who, you know, not every fourth starter is ready to go mentally to go into the bullpen and cut the workload down. Some guys just kind of are mentally at this point, or at a certain point in their career, starters. Can you think of any other type of player that this layoff has a chance at maybe benefiting across the board?
Well, I'll say this. I don't know about a particular player other than health reasons, right, Connor? I think there's some teams out there that have really benefited from this, because, like the New York Yankees, it seemed like every day in the middle of camp we were hearing about another Yankee going down. Well, now that all those guys are going to get an extra couple months of healing time, they're going to be good. The Minnesota Twins rotation, they've got some guys that are banged up, and now they're going to get 2 months, so they're going to be better in the rotation. The health-wise, I think that's, you know, pretty common and common sense. So in that regard, I would say that's probably the thing that stands out. But what about the teams? Here's my take. What about the teams like the Dodgers, like the Yankees, unlike the Cubs now, because they did not make the playoffs last year, but the Cubs from 15, 16, and 17 that have been in the playoffs for year after year after year. The Dodgers have had a deep run in the playoffs for years now. This layoff is really going to help the Los Angeles Dodgers, because they have played deep into the season for 3 or 4 straight years, and now all of a sudden those guys are going to get a physical and mental break because of this virus. So that's really going to benefit them, you know, with them having maybe the best talent of any team in baseball.
Well, it helps them until they lose Mookie Betts, right? Until they put together that huge trade, and we find out that the players now are going to get service time. If there are no games played this year, they will have traded for literally nothing. They will get nothing.
I did read that, Danny. Let me ask you, do you think that's going to fly? Do you think they can? I can't imagine the owners. When I read that, I just shook my head and went, oh my. You know, but I can't imagine the owners agreeing to that. I just can't. I can't imagine the Mookie Betts of the world coming to Los Angeles and not playing and them losing them because of service time. I just can't see that happening. But it's a possibility, and could you imagine that?
It sounds like that is going to be the case, but that's only if there are no games played. And I think they're willing to agree to some of these terms because they're making the bet. I think that there will be games of some kind at some point, which would get them out of that.
Yeah.
It's weird to think, fellas, that maybe for the first time, because of this layoff, for the first time, the Players Association has more leverage than they would otherwise have leading into a labor negotiation. That's part of the Joel Sherman report of the New York Post that Dan and I were talking about earlier today, because they've got a conversation about what the next CBA is going to look like. Owners might have to, because I'm with you, Coom. I don't think any ownership would just, in regular circumstances, sign off on that year of service time. They just don't do those kind of things. But because they've got a war to win with a CBA and not just a battle here, they may have to accede to some stuff like that. And it's weird for the players to have that extra bit of leverage that you never see players' associations have when it comes to these kind of negotiations.
Well, Connor, here's the thing. The CBA with Major League Baseball players in the union has always been very slanted towards the player. For the longest time, back from Marvin Miller's years to Donald Fehr, I was a part of that. I met Marvin, but I was not in the big leagues when he was running Major League Baseball's Players Union. Everything that I've heard from different guys, the Molitors and some of them who are union reps, that he was just a genius negotiator. Donald Fehr, we never lost a negotiation with Donald Fehr either. I mean, nobody liked the guy, including the players, but he was our guy, and we won, and we got what we wanted. But now I think that has flipped to the owner's side big time. We just don't have the leadership at the top of our union that we once did, and I just think we lose negotiations. We're giving away things that we've had for years, and we're giving them back to the owners, and I just don't understand that, because there's so much money out there now. Why would you give things back that you've negotiated and have had, and we're giving it back? So I think the owners in these current times are going to win some of these negotiations, and I really do. And this situation here, I can't imagine the owners giving into full service time for players that aren't playing, but we'll see. It's really a weird time for me with baseball. I've just seen so many things flip over in our game here. Danny, and you got to feel the same way, because you were watching baseball for years ago with the Marvin Millers, if you're just talking about the negotiations of how the CBAs went, to now. It's just like an entirely different game. It really is.
Well, it's a game we miss here on opening day, but just hearing your voice, Coom, makes everything a little bit better, because you sound like baseball, and here's to your best of health, and both mental and physical, and hanging in there. We're glad you could join us.
Well, thanks, guys. I'm listening every morning. I'm here in Florida. I plug in and listen to all you guys, so thanks for doing what you're doing. And I know the city of Chicago is happy. We're, you guys are the outlet for people to listen to sports talk and have something positive happen in their day. So same to you guys. Stay healthy, and hopefully this will come to an end soon, and we'll get back on the fields and be able to call some baseball games.
Thanks.
That is Ron Coomer, our guest on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. The segment brought to you by Indeed. Indeed is used by over 3 million businesses for hiring, where business owners and HR professionals can post job openings with screener questions, then sort, review, and communicate with candidates from an online dashboard. More at Indeed.com/hire. When we come back, I have the list of the best performances ever on opening day by individual players. And this is done, again, by win probability added. So it's a little different way. It's not just looking at sort of the gross aggregate statistics or how many home runs somebody hit. It's how much their performance mattered in their team's win. So I've got that top 10 list coming up next. See how many you can remember. Maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. I'm guessing you're probably wrong, but there's some big names on this list that is coming your way on Bernstein and McKnight next on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
All right, this is my friend Laura Oakman and her beautiful dog, the Rhodesian Ridgeback on the left. Booyah! Named in honor of her longtime close friend, Stuart Scott. And first of all, I just like saying booyah more than that. How about this? Rhodesian Ridgeback, bred to hunt lions, but scared of water. So Chance, the golden retriever, is just hanging out in the water. I got you. Come get me now. Come get me, booyah. I bet you can't. You're scared of the water. I'm going to run in the water. You won't come over here. get back in the water, Chance. I don't like your chances outside the water against booyah. As cool as the other side of the pillow. Something my dad, by the way, used to say to me. When he would come in after a late ball game, he'd give me a cool side, flip my pillow over for me, and then light up a cigarette in the kitchen and have a beer.
Good stuff from Joe Buck, as he's among the broadcasters who are just sort of broadcasting whatever they can find and wherever they can find it. Play-by-play guys will play-by-play. So what I mentioned earlier about this this Washington Post analysis here of the best ever opening day performances, so many people were saying, what about Tuffy Rhodes? Tuffy Rhodes and his three home runs. Well, it's a little more intricate than that, the way this is done. Bernstein and McKnight, by the way, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Hello. Happy opening day, or as happy as it can be. So Neil Greenberg wrote this, and he said, here's a look back at some of the best performances ever on opening day, defined here as a team's first game of the season. To add objectivity and to narrow the scope, win probability added was used to determine the ranking. And what that is a calculation of a change in a team's chances of winning from one plate appearance to the next, and it credits or debits the player based on their results. The credits are always symmetrical, meaning anything the hitter gains, the pitcher loses, and vice versa. And a higher WPA is always better, no matter what position a player plays. Okay?
Yeah, all right, that makes sense to me. I've got a couple of guesses. Some of them do follow the more traditional opening day stats, but because of the quantity, I think one or two of these has to be on there. If I don't have one of the 10 on this list, I'm going to be a little bit depressed here for a few minutes.
Okay, do you want to give your guesses first?
Yeah, let me give you a guess at a time. I'll give you a guess, and you give me a result, since you've got 10, and I've only got, I don't know, four, maybe five guesses that I think could really fit in on opening day here. Here's my first guess, and this has to be on the list, and if it's not, I don't understand baseball, and maybe we find out that very quick. Bob Feller threw a no-hitter on opening day in 1940. That still has to make a wins probability added top 10 list.
he's not on the list.
Well, then I don't get it. I don't get it, and I don't understand it, and I hate your list, and I hate you, and I hate baseball now.
Bad list.
Well, look, I'm not arguing with WPM. Number 10 is somebody named Les Sweetland on April 15th, 1930, who had a .9 WPA. The Philadelphia Phillies beat the Brooklyn Robins 1-0. He pitched a shutout. He allowed 3 hits in 9 innings, even though his ERA finished at 7.71 by the end of the regular season, the highest ERA in the modern era for a full year in which the pitcher qualified for the ERA title.
Come but on! Bob threw a no-hitter on opening day!
I'd have to look up win probability added. Ramon Hernandez, March 31st, 2011. With a .93 win probability added.
Ramon E. Hernandez?
The Cincinnati Reds beat the Milwaukee Brewers 7-6. Hernandez went 4-for-5 with a home run and 3 RBI. The home run was slugged in the bottom of the ninth with 2 out and 2 men on.
Okay, let me offer you another guess. Jason Hayward's first career game where he beat the hell out of Carlos Zambrano, I think twice, was a big game and a tight one, if memory serves. Give me Jason Hayward on the list.
Hey, not on the list, but that Ramon Hernandez home run was a 94-mile-an-hour fastball off John Axford, and what happened was the Reds had just a 9% chance to win the game before that at bat. So we're dealing with some really specific situations here. Number 8 is Bobo Newsom in 1935.
It's a lovely name.
A 14-inning complete game.
Okay, yeah, that'd probably add your win probability. That's 14 innings a long time. What year was that? Was it pre-war?
That was 1935, and Bobo Newsom actually didn't win that game. He was on the losing side, and the winner of that game is up near at the top of the list in that very same game. Number 7, April 4th, 1974, a full win probability added a single game by Pete Rose. Pete Rose went 3-for-5 with 2 doubles and 3 runs scored. It is the game in which Hank Aaron tied Babe Ruth with his 714th home run on his first swing of the season. Pete Rose got a 2-out double to center field in the ninth off Phil Niekro that changed Cincinnati's win probability from 51 to 60%.
Are any of Tuffy Rhodes, Matt Davidson, or Dimitri Young's 3 homer opening day games on this list?
No, no, and no.
It makes sense. It makes sense because none of those were tight games. I mean, you're just you're hitting dingers in blowouts, and that doesn't really change the math all that much.
This number 6 is Eddie Rommel, April 13th, 1926. Philadelphia Athletics lost to the Washington Senators 1-0, a 15-inning complete game allowing 1 earned run. Now, this I would not remember, but it's 1999, April 5th. The L.A. Dodgers beat the Arizona Diamondbacks 8-6, and Raul Mondesi was 5-for-6 with 2 home runs and 6 driven in.
Woof.
Yes, woof. Mondesi tied the game with a 2-out, 3-run homer in the top of the ninth off Greg Olson. It pushed the Dodgers' win probability from 49 to 54%. Then he hit a 2-out, 2-run homer in the 11th that sealed the deal, pushing win probability from 43% to 100%. Now, only 2 players had more runs driven in their team's first game of the season. One is somebody named Brant Alvea in 1970, and the other is
Mario Machado?
Is Corey Patterson in 2003.
No.
Yeah, I didn't remember that.
No, neither did I. Although, it's worth pointing out, Corey Patterson in 03 was headed to an All-Star game and having the greatest season he ever put together up until he blew his knee apart going to first base on a... I think he was trying to beat something out that he had grounded to second base, if memory serves. But he was having a terrific start to the 2003 season.
Yeah, his knee went as he planted his foot on the base. As he was stepping on first is when it went. All right, we're already at the fourth best opening day performance ever with a 1.09 win probability added. Clint Brown, April 12th, 1933, pitched a 13-inning complete game, allowing one earned run. Number three is Walter Johnson.
Oh,
1919, right. Correct. He led the majors in ERA in 1919 at 1.49, and his second best game of the season was opening day. It earned a game score, a Bill James game score, of 90. And the Washington Senators beat the Philadelphia Athletics 1-0. It was a 13-inning. Number two on the list is that earlier aforementioned game is a pitcher named Mel Harder. Okay, Mel Harder.
Great guy, never met him.
A 14-inning complete game, and the lone earned run that he gave up was to player-manager Rogers Hornsby, who went 1-for-5. In 1955, yeah, he was all right. In 1955, Joe DiMaggio was asked who the hardest pitcher for him to hit was, and he said Mel Harder. He said he had one of the best curveballs I've ever seen. Joe DiMaggio only hit 180 against him lifetime.
That's, you're gonna have to add Mel Harder to like Herb Score and other,
right?
Those dudes that just the career didn't pan out the way it should have with the stuff. But everybody from back in the day will tell you Herb Score, he had the stuff, man. Mel Harder, he had the stuff.
He actually, Mel Harder struck out DiMaggio 3 times in one game. Think about that.
Ooh, that.
Yeah.
How many 3-strikeout games did Joe DiMaggio even have?
Probably, I don't know, 15. I mean, I'm guessing like the number of times you would have to, what you'd have to do to strike him out 3 times in the same game. That's a great question. I'm sure somebody can find that out. Your number one best ever opening day performance in the history of Major League Baseball was also Walter Johnson. April 13th, 1926, a full 1.56 WPA. The Senators beat the Athletics 1-0. It was a 15-inning shutout.
Huh. Yeah, that'd do it.
Based on men on base and outs left in the inning during each at-bat, the expectation would have been for Johnson to surrender 8 runs, but instead he allowed none.
Well, you work essentially 2 games of baseball in one, and the sheer counting probability of your wins probability added going up there kind of matters some. I get that. That makes sense. What was the lowest win probability added total on the list? What was number 10?
Number 10 was a 0.9, I want to say. I got to scroll back down to find it. But that was, the lowest was Les Sweetland with a 0.9.
Okay, so Bob Feller's opening day no-hitter against the White Sox, incidentally, in 1940, came in at a 0.888 win probability added. So he just missed the top 10 on this list.
Where did you find that?
Just a Baseball Reference.
Oh, cool.
Baseball Reference. It was opening day, April 16th. It was the Indians against the White Sox. Game here in Chicago, 5 walks for Feller, 8 strikeouts.
I'm still calling shenanigans on this list.
Yeah, I mean, any list that doesn't have, you know, there's no Babe Ruth reference. I got Bob Feller tossed off the list.
Yeah, in the sport where everything is about ripping away outside context, with like all these 3 home run games and other stuff, they don't matter as much because the games were blowouts. That seems a little problematic to me.
And I'm with you there. I'm with you.
The Midday Midway is coming up next. We're reading a lot about what our self-isolation and quarantining and social distancing is doing for drops in pollution and changes to the environment. I have one of those unintended consequences coming your way. Also, something that isn't quite what it seems, that is an Instagram fad among beautiful people that isn't quite fair. It's also a contextual issue, so we'll get to that.
All right, I got 3 different things that I've found to help keep you busy this weekend if you are, well, which you should be, social distancing. 3 different things that I really went down the rabbit hole on yesterday. You're going to enjoy every single one of them. The Midday Midway is coming your way next. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
the first half or the second half. You know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Time for the Midday Midway, where we get you first caught up on what we were talking about in the first half of the show. It is opening day. It was supposed to be opening day. We're kind of treating this like it is opening day, because right now we've got to find these things. Baseball is meaningful to a lot of people, and sort of mentioned early on that even though I guess I'm not really a baseball romantic, I'm feeling a bit more like it today, and just understanding that baseball is kind of there to backstop people and to give people something to have. And we got to come together and try to find new and different ways for that connective tissue to exist. And if that means you're calling the Score, if that means you're listening, if that means you're hanging out, I hope we can try to fill a little bit of that void as well. We talked to Ron Coomer. We heard the wonderful Steve Stone story about Harry Carey. Also talked about this apparent agreement that's being reached between MLB and the Players Association regarding service time.
So if you're looking for things to get into here while we're all social distancing and staying at home, I've got a couple for you. Jay Zawoski dialed in here to talk a little bit about different musicians that are offering all kinds of different stuff throughout our social distancing. I have a handful. I know Jay's got a couple. Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, just tweeted this out this morning. Apparently, I haven't gotten into it because we were prepping for the show. I saw it this morning. But he's tweeted out that there is a new Nine Inch Nails album, which I'm sure runs something like 40 hours and contains 6 or 7 notes for the first 3 hours, because that's what they do. But that's out there for you if you're interested. If you haven't gotten into J Electronica's new album, you should. I know some people have really liked A Written Testimony. Some people have thought it fell flat. I think you should give it a run and decide for yourself. It's fantastic. And my guy, Ben Folds, is following along with a trend that a number of different performers have gotten into. I saw John Legend as one of the first to do it, just kind of putting a camera down in front of the piano and letting a live concert stream for free. Ben Folds is going to do a series of them. He starts Saturday, I think it's Saturday afternoon. I want to say it's like 5 p.m. Central Time. I love that performers, that musicians who are capable of doing something like this because they're good at doing their craft live. I love that they're putting this out there for people and for fans, and I hope you can get into it. And I know a lot of them have had links where you can help, you know, donate a couple of bucks for the concert that go to places, that go to healthcare workers that are on the front lines and help battle COVID-19. So that's it's a good way to spend your time and put a couple of bucks toward a good cause too. Jay, I know you had a couple of people that were getting into this sort of thing as well.
Yeah, the first thing I saw like this was the Luck Reunion, which was South by Southwest, because that was canceled. A lot of those artists got together and did a show that way. That was really great. You were able to tip while the show was happening. It was just a bunch of people from their living room, and a lot of musicians since then have followed suit. I know Dave Matthews is doing a concert from his living room tonight. A bunch of my favorites, Jason Isbell and his wife Amanda Shires, they do a daily live stream on Instagram. And Joshua Headley, who's an independent country artist, has been performing live from Robert's Western World on Broadway in Nashville. It's just empty. It's just him, and there's a virtual tip jar. So a lot of artists are doing things like that. Because, look, I think, you know, you mentioned some of the more successful artists in music. A lot of these more independent artists, their livelihood and their life is based on the money they make touring, selling merchandise, all those things, and they can't do that anymore. So they're sort of scrambling to support themselves through all this. And I think it's something people lose sight of, especially the way music works now. So many artists, the vast majority of artists, are so dependent on touring and selling merchandise and selling physical records that this shutdown almost, you know, it really damages them as much as a waitress or someone else who gets paid by the hour. So they're trying to make money for themselves while the more successful ones are raising money for a bigger cause. So either way, there's a ton of stuff to listen to and a ton of stuff to find throughout this whole thing. That's been kind of the silver lining for me.
Page 6 of the New York Post is chronicling a new trend among celebrities. And boy, you talk about sacrifice. You talk about really doing this for the cause. This, what's happening now is a bunch of famous people are skipping makeup. And they're sharing pictures of themselves. Yes, yes, this is how far it's come.
That these are the real heroes, Dan.
Are sharing pictures of themselves on social media, barefaced, with no makeup. See, here's the problem. These are some of the names that we're talking about here as you scroll through. Jessica Alba, Gabrielle Union, Ciara, Zoe Kravitz, Julianne Moore, Vanessa Williams, Cindy Crawford, Heidi Klum. Here's the thing. You're supermodels.
They're all hideous, you don't, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah, you don't need makeup. You are Heidi Klum. It's not a big deal. You're already immensely famous for being some of the most beautiful people on the planet. But yes, thank you, Selma Hayek. Yeah, you look pretty good. Thank you for sacrificing as you are for the cause.
It would be pretty funny though if Zoe Kravitz posted a photo, no makeup, but actually just posts a photo of like Danny DeVito or something. Just let everybody know that in actuality, I am Danny DeVito.
That would be funny.
So, got into something last night. We were all talking about it during the pre-show meeting yesterday, and I have been sucked into Tiger King on Netflix.
Yeah.
Rick, I know you've watched some of it. You finished it, right? And Jay is a couple episodes in. This is the number one show on any streaming media right now. It almost defies explanation. You can watch the trailer, and like Rick said yesterday, watch the trailer and just know that it is crazier. It is full of turns and character twists and just insanity than you could possibly imagine when you're talking about people who are raising tigers in cages for profit and also trying to kill each other. It's unbelievable. It's every 10 minutes I'm looking at my girlfriend watching the show going, what is happening? What is happening? None of this makes any sense, and I don't believe that these are real people. And then the show just keeps moving on. I can't wait to get into the rest of the season.
I had no idea.
You should watch the first episode. It's like 40 minutes. Give the first episode a spin, see where you are from there, because I didn't necessarily know if I would get hooked, and then a day and a half later, I was done with all 7 episodes, and I'm very happy that I did it.
I watched the first 5 or 6 minutes of the first episode, and just hearing the facts of the number of tigers, the number of animals that are being held in captivity by these people, and how you have distinct subcultures between like the big cat people and the monkey people, and mm-hmm. how it's like, even they're like, well, oh, the monkey people were they're completely crazy, and the big cat people, yeah, they're over. It's amazing that the number of subcultures is astonishing. So I'll give it a run.
You should. You'll love it. We did, you'll remember, on the Midday Midway, in this segment, I don't know, a couple of months ago, the main character, Joe Exotic, in Tiger King, is in jail. The show starts out with him in jail, so I'm not spoiling anything. He's in jail for putting a hit on one of his rivals. We did that story in the Midday, and we laughed about it a ton. Come to find out, some guy had already been making a documentary spanning 5 years about these people, and that's what Tiger King has ended up becoming. It's an unbelievably crazy show.
So perfect timing for this Midday Midway story. This from KDVR in Boulder, Colorado. One of the unintended consequences of social distancing and staying at home, we know we've seen some incredible photographs. Pollution is down. The canals in Venice are now so clear that you can see fish swimming underneath the bridges. There have been sightings of dolphins coming back to areas of open water where they hadn't been before with ship traffic. And now, recent mountain lion sightings in Boulder, Colorado, have residents wondering if stay-at-home orders are causing the animals to move into more populated areas. Boulder police confirm they received 4 calls over 2 days of people seeing or hearing multiple mountain lions during daylight hours. And Colorado Parks and Wildlife, it does believe that mountain lions could be moving into residential areas as people are staying home. They say it's a little hard to make inferences, but as we get down the road, we can combine some observations. But they say mountain lions are going to follow where their prey resources are, and mountain lions in general avoid areas of human disturbance. And as urban areas are quieting, it is possible they may move into new territory. Said if there's less activity in towns and open spaces, absolutely, you could have wildlife that will be trying to use those areas. And it's the usual recommendations, make loud noises to scare predators away. There's also some of these doorbell cameras are finding instances in more rural areas of bears coming in and porch pirating stuff, especially food deliveries, where they're just kind of wandering around unbothered.
So one more list and some sports to watch for you while we wait for new sports to start. The Ringer put out a list of the 40 classic sports games and moments to revisit while social distancing. It's got everything from Secretariat winning the Belmont to the Warriors blowing a 3-1 series lead. It's got the full, I tweeted this out yesterday, you can find it at C1 McKnight. I'm sure you just follow The Ringer too and find it there. But it's got all kinds of full games involved. It's got the highlight clips as well. And the one that really got me going, Dan, I know we talked a while ago about the 08 Olympics in Beijing, and I think you had missed a lot of it, if memory serves. I was working in minor league baseball. I was in Myrtle Beach working minor leagues, and we kept the games up on the big screen, like in between innings at some point. And for this race, for the men's 4x1 freestyle, it's Michael Phelps and the gold medal. Jason Lezak comes out of nowhere to win the race from like a whole body length behind. It was a huge moment in Olympic sports history. That race, we put up on the Jumbotron in Myrtle Beach after the game was over. People stayed, people watched. It was this huge moment that's on there. And if you want to, if you need to get pumped for sports, you know, if you're looking for a little juice out of this stuff, I found a bunch of stuff on this list. A bunch of these moments of the 40 fit the bill for me, and I'm sure a couple of them will for you too.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day around this time, leading right up to 11 o'clock. Jason Benetti is going to join us next here on non-opening day, opening day. He is the voice of the White Sox on television, and he is going to give us his thoughts on baseball and life. Next, keep it here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.